For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The real world BA45 that has been circulating, and we know that that is really quite good. So you have immunological data, and you have now clinical efficacy data. Everybody was asking the question, where's the clinical efficacy data? Now it has come out with the CDC MMWR this morning. So we know it's safe. We know that it is effective. So my message and my final message, maybe the final message I give you from this podium, is that please, for your own safety, for that of your family, get your updated COVID-19 shot as soon as you're eligible to protect yourself, your family, and your community. I urge you to visit vaccines.gov to find a location where you can easily get an updated vaccine. And please do it as soon as possible. Thank you.
Oh, for the love of all things. Was that Dr. Tony Fauci, or was that Chris Arps doing a parody of Dr. Tony Fauci? Hard to tell the difference.
You know, yesterday was supposed to be Dr. Fauci's swan song, of course, where we were supposed to say how thankful we were to him that he saved us from this awful pandemic. But I think in most people's minds, they'll always remember the disaster of that press conference and the image and audio thing that'll be in their mind forever of Dr. Fauci not wanting to answer the question, and the White House not letting him answer the question of the origins of COVID. Where did it come from? And of course, they don't want to get on that topic. It's because Dr. Fauci was funding gain of function research in China.
That press conference became an absolute you-know-what show.
It was.
I mean, it was an eruption. It got out of control. Corinne Jean-Pierre, not a good look for her, scolding reporters in the press. Boy, when have you ever seen a Democrat administration's press secretary scolding the press? I mean, man, she came down on them with a hammer. And is his name Simon Ateba? Simon?
Yes.
Simon Ateba from an African news agency went after her. And, Chris, I did a little research. Apparently, the two of them don't get along very much.
Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday, that they have history between them because he said at one time that it's fantastic that you're black and you're female and you're lesbian and you're the first and all of that, but you don't call on me. And you don't call on other reporters. You call on the same people. So they've had a simmering beef for a long time, and it simmered over yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Shows that the White House is more into the narrative-telling business than in the fact-reporting business. And Tony Fauci is likely going to be seen from again, most likely raising his right hand in front of a congressional hearing in the House next year, and he's going to have to answer some tough questions. You know, Chris, what is the big deal about asking Tony Fauci about the seminal question of COVID? From whence did it come, right?
Yeah, and as I said, I think it interrupted the swan song. They wanted everyone singing his praises, how great he was, and didn't want him to answer any tough questions, especially with this being his final press conference. But I think this also shows just how Corinne Jean-Pierre is over her head. We've talked about her background. She's a former MoveOn.org spokesperson. She was a far-left commentator on MSNBC. So for her to lose her temper like that in that high profile situation and at that podium speaks volumes.
And for Fauci to go out, let's say the eruption had not occurred, for him to go out proclaiming to America that during your holiday festivities that you should be concerned about wearing masks and getting the vax.
All of a sudden, it's 2020 again.
Right. I felt like we went back to the future. I'm like, what's he talking about? Why?
Yeah.
Why would we do any of that? And look, I'm not here to give you medical advice. I don't think any of us want to do that. But to say that you have to go get the COVID-19 vaccine after everything we've learned, he's acting like none of us have the internet, that we don't listen to the news, and that we're just a bunch of dumb hillbillies out here in flyover country. You know, go to your doctor. But I don't think you should be listening to Tony Fauci anymore for your medical advice either.
And I just want to qualify with what I'm about to say. This is my own opinion. But, you know, this vaccine was quote unquote rushed, and it's not a vaccine. But usually there are many, many years of trials when you bring something to the market like this for mass distribution. But of course, we were in a pandemic. We wanted to keep people safe. You know, when you watch these commercials about all these different drugs, and they tell you all the maladies that could affect you if you take this drug. And in many of those, they talk about, you know, one of them side effects could be death, you know, and everything. That happens in these trials when they test these drugs. Some people die, some people get drugs, but it happens to a small enough amount of people that the government deems it safe for wide distribution. Look, I think when the COVID vaccine came out, we were the guinea pigs. And for some people, this mRNA, especially younger people and the other vaccine affected women, it affects them and gives them myocarditis. If this was a commercial talking about the COVID vaccine, you would have on, you would have a disclaimer that said, hey, one of the side effects of this is you may get myocarditis and die.
That's a great question. Chris, I'm trying to, as you were going through all that, I'm trying to think, okay, so how can I play devil's advocate with this? But I agree with every single thing you say on this. And here's the problem. Where's the lawyers, right? Lawyers love this kind of crap.
Well, Tim, but remember, because this was vaccine was rushed due to an emergency, they got exemptions from lawsuits.
They probably did. They probably got immunity.
They have immunity. If you get sick or something, it's hey, you don't, there's nothing you can do.
I know a bunch of wealthy trial lawyers out there who are going, man, I'd love to sink my claws into this thing. And you know what, Chris? They won't let that happen because the last thing that the government wants would be for the COVID-19 vaccine to be put on trial.
Yeah.
That is the last thing they want because you know what would happen? People would have to sit for depositions. They would be asked about everything you just discussed of how this thing got to market. Did you test this? Did you test that? The Pfizer lady went on a panel in public and said, we didn't test this thing to see whether or not it would prevent transmissibility.
You know, usually when a new drug is tested, they test thousands of people over a period of time. Well, this was a massive drug trial, basically, with millions of people. To see basically what are the side, they have no idea what the side effects are. And we're learning them now because, the pandemic created a huge million person trial for these mRNA vaccines.
Hey, guess who we got on the line? We got one of our favorite medical experts. Gene joins us this afternoon as we head into Thanksgiving weekend. Gene, haven't heard from you in a while. Thanks so much for calling the show today. You're on the air.
Hey, Gene.
You're welcome. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Tobler's the medical expert, not me. I'm just a respiratory therapist.
Well, you know what? You know a thing or two more than Chris and I do about the human body. How about that?
Okay, well, I'll give you that. You're more well-versed at the law than I am.
Gene, what you got on your mind today?
Hey, our beloved Corinne Jean-Pierre starts out introducing him as our guest. Just like the hubris of these people, just my bottom butt. They are our employees and should answer to us. And she's covering up for him. Oh, he's short on time, gotta go. What a bunch of BS. And as I had to take the jab to stay at work, and the waiver that you signed for that, you sign your life away, and you can never sue these people for anything, which is patently, absolutely wrong. I'd love to get your take on that, Speaker.
Yeah, it's kind of anti-American, Gene. Look, I'm not a, I was a lawyer. I was a lawyer for almost 20 years. I've practiced a lot of cases. I did plaintiff's work. I do believe we have an overly litigious society, but you know, it's kind of the American way, Gene. If you're wronged, you should have redress for your grievances, and I think it's yet another horror story that's come out of this that people, you know, you're screwed. You're basically, as you just explained, you're largely screwed if you want to have any remuneration for any damages that are done to you because of this vaccine.
Yeah, and these drug companies have been given immunity.
You have absolutely none. You look at that and you, for your life, sign away your rights to sue or have any redress. They can F up as big as they want, and it's like, too bad, so sad. You're going to croak from this crap, and it's like, hey, sorry, that's the way it is. I'm taking my money, and you're cashing out and going home with it. That's just so, so wrong. Something needs to get done about that.
Could not agree more.
One last thing, as far as Fauci goes, if he is found wronged in any kind of manner or fashion, that son of a gun needs his pension. Because we are going to be paying a fortune for that bozo for his existence for a long time. And I'm sorry, but I'm done with that dude.
Gene, thank you so much. We appreciate you, Gene, and thankful that you listen to us every day.
Oh, you bet. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We still have a ton to be so thankful for.
That is so right, Gene. Thank you for calling. Happy Thanksgiving.
Yep. God bless you.
Thank you, Gene. All right, there goes Gene. All right, it is nearly 4:19 in the p.m. Chris, Chris's Corner today.
Yeah, Chris's Corner is there's going to be an execution in Missouri next week, and I'm going to give my thoughts on it.
Okay, very good. That's a sobering topic for 4:42, but an important one indeed. We had many a debate in the House chamber about the death penalty back in the day, and I'm sure they're continuing to debate it as of now. It is 4:19 here on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp show. We will be back with Mike Ferguson, that morning show guy. We'll talk to him about the local and national news of the day as we head into a Thanksgiving weekend. See what Mike's got on his mind and what he's been up to when Chris and I return here on the Tim Jones and Chris Sharp show at 101.9 94.1. It's News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
COVID-19 also helped legitimize instruments of control.
Chris, that was a little nugget came across from one George Soros talking about the fact that COVID-19 legitimized the tools of control. Kind of saying the quiet part out loud.
Well, I think it absolutely did. Any time that you inject fear into a situation, people will give up their rights willingly. People, and look what happened. Some did when it came to having forced vaccinations in order to work, which is not right. And I don't fault anybody that had to do that. We all have to eat. We all have to pay their bills. But in an ordinary situation, when you sit back and think about it, you're like, yeah, there's no way I would let my job tell me I have to get a untested vaccine in order to work. That's nuts. Mm-hmm. But during fear, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, yeah, I have to do it. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't feel good about it.
Mm-hmm. So. And as much as we had to deal with that in this country, we've pushed back a bit at quite hard, and we're still hearing stories around the world where the opposite is still occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk to our next guest about that and see what he thinks of those matters and more.
Mike Ferguson.
I'm the world's heavyweight wrestling champion.
Gabe Pfeiffer.
I'm Batman.
Get up, can't you hear the alarm? Get up.
I want to be clear, I'm not going nuts.
No.
Mike Ferguson in the morning on News Talk STL.
The host of the morning show, Mike Ferguson, in the morning, every morning here at News Talk STL from 5:30 to 9 a.m. We've got all kinds of great products throughout the entire day, and Mike leads the charge on the morning airwaves. Mike, good afternoon. Welcome back. Thanks for joining Chris and I here this afternoon as we approach the holiday weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks to you as well. You know, Mike, you know, back in the day when people on the center-right side of the political spectrum would mention George Soros and try to tell people of how nefarious and evil he is, we were called anti-Semites, we were told to take off our tinfoil hats, but, you know, I think the world has maybe gotten a little wiser, at least those who like freedom and liberty, about what George Soros is really up to. You know, he's an ultra-billionaire, and he likes to create chaos, confusion, and anarchy because he's decided he hates the free market capitalist system of the United States of America.
Yeah, absolutely. And people also forget just how cunning and smart this guy is, which is an incredibly dangerous combination.
Mm-hmm. Mike, you guys had a very interesting discussion this morning. I was listening about the shooter, and we have so many of them now. I can't remember which one it was, but the shooter who is now claiming that he is binary and that's how he wants to be addressed. And I think Susie made a very interesting point, and I agree with her on that, that I'd like to know exactly when did this person claim he was binary. Could this be just a defense tactic?
Oh, I guess it could be. Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about is the Colorado Springs, Colorado mass shooting that happened over the weekend in the in the gay nightclub. This 22-year-old guy goes in there and starts shooting people. He killed five people. At least 25 others were injured. Just innocent lives lost. And what happened is his defense attorney, in filing the paperwork and some of the motions, declared that he is non-binary and he uses they/them pronouns, and he's like, like referred to as Mix as opposed to Mr. or Miss. And I played a clip from CNN of Allison Camerato through her gritted teeth reporting that this guy declares considers himself non-binary. And so what happened was the entire narrative that this is a conservative Christian, you know, sort of thing, attack on the LGBT community kind of stuff. All of a sudden, they were kind of left with nothing at the moment. And she actually said that she goes, well, now he says that, but we have no idea, you know, how long it's been. But nobody else is questioned, you know, when they say that. So his attorney, and he says that he considers himself part of that community as far as non-binary. And at the moment, that just means that their entire narrative is just gone. Could it be a tactic? Well, maybe anything's, you know, a tactic. It's not like people haven't lied in court or used different tactics before. But keep in mind that this is just a day or so after the Colorado Springs Police Department, in a press conference, took great length. They went to great effort when they were listing off the names of the victims to focus more on their damn pronouns than the actual names of the people. It was an exercise in ridiculousness, and it was trying to be some kind of gesture to the LGBT community. It was just stupid sounding is what it was. And then all of a sudden, the guy that they kept trying to say, because of libs of TikTok, because of Tucker Carlson, because of Newsmax, because of talk radio, all of that has turned into violence and hate and killing. And all of a sudden, all of that has gone away for the moment, and they don't know what to do. And I also said during that conversation, guys, I said, we need to be careful not to gloat about this. It's one thing to say, yeah, see, you shouldn't be jumping the gun and accusing people who had nothing to do with it. So there are still 5 lives lost and 25 mm-hmm. people injured. Mm-hmm. We got to remember that. But we do also, I think it's fair to point out that the left looks for any reason whatsoever to not just exploit a tragedy, but look for ways to attach people they disagree with to heinous crimes in order to try to shame people into shutting up. This is about them being on defense, in mm-hmm. my opinion, against parents who are speaking up against the books like Genderqueer in their elementary school library, or drag shows twerking at little children in schools and libraries. They're on the defensive. They're losing that part of it right now. And so what they're trying to do is shame people into silencing their opposition to just perversion that's out there right now.
Yeah, Mike, to drill down on, I think, 2 really good points you just made there. Number one, Mike, it doesn't matter that Allison Camerota and mm-hmm. CNN and the rest of the goofballs on that panel there don't like it, right? Because, Mike, they've made the rules, right? The yep. rules are, it doesn't matter if you don't like it. You get to self-identify whenever you want to self-identify, however you want to self-identify. And because of what the left has said, nobody gets to question you on that, right? So if he wants to identify as a 5-horn purple people eater, he gets to do that because of the stupid rules they set up. So, Mike, it shows how they're so wrong on mm-hmm. discarding objective truth. And I, this is not going to happen overnight, but I think they're eventually all going to self-immolate on this. And, Mike, secondly, to your second point, they're going to now remove this story from the national headlines, and they shouldn't. Just because it's not crazy white conservative racist guy with gun doesn't mean we shouldn't focus on these issues of not gun violence, but just plain old violence that's occurring in our culture.
And evil, yeah. I mean, and by the way, I will note that the rest of that discussion on that panel after she reported that, they kept saying he and him and his thing, and you know, he's so they threw it out. So a complete double standard on this. But yeah, I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that there are horrible people amongst us in society everywhere. You know, and so this is one of the reasons that we argue we have a human right to self-defense. And that applies to everybody. If you're gay, straight, Christian, atheist, liberal, conservative, you know, or anything like that, there is a human right of self-defense. And 30 people at least had their civil rights violated by a madman. And so the left is going to be forced at this point to confront the reality. Now, I think you're right, Tim. I think they would rather just bury the story like they did. Remember the Pulse nightclub shooting in mm-hmm. Orlando, Florida? Mm-hmm. The same scenario played out, and then they discovered that the shooter is Islamic, and then all of a sudden it went away. you know, until an anniversary came around.
Mike, city and county leaders have announced that they have come to an agreement on how to split the Rams settlement money. St. Louis City is getting $250 million, St. Louis County $160 million. I'm scared to death to think of what Megan Green and Tashar Jones and Sam Page are going to do with this money. What are your thoughts on what should be done and what do you think will be done?
Well, what should be done is something permanent. We're talking infrastructure. We're talking, you know, shoring up first responders, you know, whether it's, you know, improving recruitment and retention or facilities or equipment, roads, bridge, something that is permanent is what I'd love to see them do. As far as what St. Louis City is going to do, let's start there. They have now at this point looked at almost every dollar in their city budget as a way to virtue signal for as far left as they can. This is a group of people in the St. Louis City government that set aside over $1 million of taxpayer money in order to subsidize paying for women to go get an abortion 6 miles down the highway. And Sam Page tried to do that, but the county council, even the majority Democratic, said, no, that's just dumb. We're not doing that. Yeah, I can see Sam Page probably doing a token thing or two with police or something like that. But the reality is it's just going to probably go into Sam Page's slush fund. And so I think the one thing we can probably count on is irresponsibility. I just hope that the actual checks are not cut to St. Louis County until after the 1st of January, when you know, Dennis Hancock is put into office. I mean, you know, Tim Fitch is going to be responsible as well. But I really do think that it's going to be just a battle to have any kind of transparency and fiscal responsibility. We know that St. Louis County is what, $40 million down in their budget. I mean, they're at a deficit of $40 million, and they're pulling from the emergency reserve fund on this. So that's got to be shored up. There has to be something with a good return on investment. It's got to be something that's infrastructure. It cannot be another ribbon cutting program that Sam Page wants to put on a campaign flyer in 4 years.
Speaking to Mike Ferguson on the Mike Ferguson on the Morning Show, Mike, you've probably been happily surprised as we have with the renaissance here at Union Station that we've been experiencing. It's where our station's located. Yeah. And you get here, oh, dark early in the morning. We leave here, oh, dark early at night. And there's people around, Mike. There's people here seeing the carousel, the aquarium, the Polar Express. They're coming down for hockey games and now soccer games. Mike, it's like we have two different worlds going on in St. Louis. It's like the business community and a lot of the folks are trying to do everything they can to revitalize the city. If only there was leadership working hand in hand with them. What do you say about that?
You talk about mixed signals coming out of St. Louis, right? You know, I mean, I see school buses, you know, in Union Station going to the aquarium and places. And if you don't get out to, you know, the Soda Fountain restaurant in time, you're just not getting in. You know, there's other restaurants here. You know, I get there so early that the security guys used to like slowly pull up and, you know, look at me, you know, because I get there like 2:45 or 3 o'clock. And I'm like, OK, you and your yellow flashing light can go away. You know, so we have that, but at the same time, you've got businesses downtown pulling out and moving. And, you know, chastising the city government, specifically saying you have to do something about crime. We you know, there are businesses that are saying they want to be in downtown St. Louis and be part of the solution. They're willing to lose money and they're willing to lose recruitment because they feel some kind of, you know, virtuous call to help restore St. Louis downtown. But City Hall is making it very clear. We're not going to invest in public safety. You know, we're going to do the bare minimum to deal with the homeless problem that we've got. We're not going to keep things clean, but we expect everybody to support us. And by the way, we're going to still tax you at unbelievably high rates compared to competing cities. And now they're talking about this, Riverport South sort of area below the arch where there's hundreds of millions of dollars in a marina and entertainment district that they want to build. And of course, they're going to want taxpayers to be on the hook for tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies on this. So if they want the development geographically, we're in a good spot, but they've got to settle on a message that is business friendly and public safety focused. Otherwise, all they're going to do is continue just to build pretty stuff, cut a ribbon, take a picture, and then watch it drain out in 10 or 15 years.
Mike, you are, of course, our resident baseball guy. How shocked were you that Albert Pujols was named National League Comeback Player of the Year?
Not at all. That was a no-brainer. And that's not me just giving a homer opinion because, you know, because I'm here in St. Louis. When you look at what he did, especially that second half of the year, especially after the last two or three years, I mean, honestly, most people agreed before that last half of this past season, they're like, man, Albert really should have retired when things ended with the Angels because he just didn't contribute anything with the Angels the last year, nothing with the Dodgers. And then the first half of this year, we're all kind of going, yeah, I don't think he's going to make it. And then he turned it on and was a huge part, and then them, you know, winning the division. So to me, there were no other choices.
Mike will be doing some best ofs next couple days. He'll be back Monday morning out of the gates at 5:35 with Gabe Pfeiffer, Ken Williams, and the rest of the crew. You can listen to him. You should listen to him every morning, 5:30 to 9 a.m. Get you to work safe and sound. Mike Ferguson will. 101.9 94.1. This is News Talk STL. Welcome home.
Better love. Carved out of caring, fashioned by fate, suffer so.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 4:48 in the p.m. here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. The sun is setting here in downtown St. Louis.
Which means the temperature, too, doesn't it?
Ooh, yeah, get a little chilly, but not too bad. Supposed to be in the 50s about when we get out of here. Pretty mild, mild-ish weekend. It's going to be very seasonal. Not too hot, not too cold for this Thanksgiving. Welcome back to the program. Chris Arps is here. Stella's here. I'm here. How y'all doing? Good to see you this afternoon. Chris, you've got a corner coming up next.
I do. There is a execution scheduled here in Missouri next week, and it may be a case that many people have forgotten about, but it was a very spectacular, dramatic case about 17 years ago. And Congressman Cleaver and Congressman Cori Bush injected themselves into this case, and we're going to talk about it next in Chris's Corner.
Chris.
The whole thing is a joke.
Good God, we gotta do something here, people.
It's not personal, it's strictly business.
My favorite black leader of all time is Frederick Douglass, who asked after emancipation, well, we just freed the blacks, now what are we gonna do with them? His answer was, leave us alone.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
Kevin Johnson, who is now 37 years old, is scheduled to be executed on November 29th, 2022, for the murder of Kirkwood police officer William McAtee. If you remember that fateful day, and I'll tell the story just a little bit of what happened. Apparently, officers arrived at Kevin Johnson's home to serve a warrant on him for a prior situation. He hid because he didn't want to get caught. Police came in the home anyway. What happened was all of the commotion made his younger brother, who had a heart condition, have a fatal heart attack while police were searching for him. Because of Mr. Johnson, Kevin Johnson was very close to his brother. He had this belief that the police didn't do everything that they could to get help for his little brother, and that enraged him. And he found the first police officer that he found on the scene and basically assassinated Officer William McAtee in his car. The sad thing about it was that this particular officer was not at the scene during the commotion and during the emergency condition for Kevin Johnson's brother. He had got there after everything had started, so he was really an innocent bystander. Kevin Johnson was given the death penalty. He was 17 years old. He's 37 years now. Now, there have been efforts to spare his life. He has a, at the time that he murdered Officer William McAtee, he had a 2-year-old daughter. He was still in high school at the time. And she has asked for clemency. She has asked for mercy for her father, a former teacher of Kevin Johnson in high school, has asked for mercy for him as well. There are a lot of mitigating factors that went into the situation. It was tragic. He had a very poor upbringing. He allegedly said that he ate roaches in order to survive. A couple of people, and I mentioned it before, have gotten involved in this situation to try to help him. They are Congressman Emanuel Cleaver and Congresswoman Cori Bush. And I have to say straight out, I think they are doing this young man a disservice with their letter, because within the letter, they are claiming that Mr. Johnson, Kevin Johnson, is being executed because of racism and because the prosecuting attorney had motives in order to have him, to want him executed. Look, I think having a letter signed by a congresswoman who I think it's safe to say hates the police is not a good thing for your cause. And for Kevin Johnson to get any leniency in this case, he is going to have to basically throw himself on the mercy of the legal system in order for him to get his sentence commuted. And I think trying to blame the system and trying to blame the prosecutor for his conviction, I think, does him a disservice. Now, one of the things that they do point out regarding the racism, this is the point they make, is that during Bob McCullough's reign as prosecutor, there were 5 people that killed cops during his reign. 4 of those people were African American. 1 was black. The 4 African Americans got the death penalty. The white offender did not get the death penalty. And so that's one of the reasons that they are claiming that there was racism in this case. Again, as I said earlier, this is a tragic case all around. It's tragic for Mr. McEntee's family. It's tragic for Kevin Johnson's family. It's tragic that his young daughter, and now he has a grandchild, will not have them in their lives. The system failed him, but the system is not responsible for his actions that day. And unfortunately, taking the actions that he did is going to, unfortunately, he's going to have to forfeit his life for those actions. He has always admitted, of course, that he committed the crimes. That is nothing in doubt. I just think they should have made a better defense to try to get him clemency than trying to blame racism and the system in that respect of racism. I don't think you're going to get much sympathy from Governor Parsons or the general public for that. I mean, people look at the justice system as, you know, death penalty. You may or may not agree with it, but a jury of his peers, that is the verdict that they came with, that he should forfeit his life for that crime. And it does a disservice to William McEntee's family, who has waited 17, 18 years for, I don't think they would call it justice. I don't think they would call it vengeance. I think they'd call it justice. I don't think they would call it vengeance. They've waited 17 years to see this sentence meted out. And I think they should have their justice as well. And that is Chris's Corner.
Yeah, Chris, it's a tough thing to have to say. It's horrible that we have to live in a world where we have to consider these things. And, you know, I doubt Governor Parson's going to issue a stay. Governor Parson is he was a sheriff for decades.
So forget about
He's a law and order guy. He's best friends with my uncle, and I've told that story. Yeah. And so Governor Parson has had to consider many issues like this of life and death in his life, and he's had to weigh them.
Yeah.
And these are not light concerns. You know, yeah.
There is one death penalty case. It happened in the mid 2000s that I agree that this person should have gotten clemency. All the other ones, I'm like, hey, that's a sentence that you got. But this was a case where a young man was addicted to drugs, ended up killing his grandmother, and he received a death sentence because of that. But the family did not want him to get a death sentence. They wanted his sentence commuted. They wanted him to live. And usually you don't commute those sentences because you have to take into account the family. This is what they want. Well, this is the family wanted leniency and justice. And I think in that case that I would, if I was governor, I would have probably granted the family's wishes in that particular case. But other than that, I'm full 100% death penalty if the case has been proven.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not an absolutist on this issue either. I think it is very much a case-by-case basis. And Chris, we live in a world where a large group of people believe that babies should be killed in the womb. Yeah. So if you're gonna justify that, then the death penalty, you know, stands on its own 2 feet. I would make a trade with the left if they were to say no more abortions on the planet. I would maybe consider no more death penalty. But, you know, it seems like we value life on one hand and not another. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's hard to reconcile the two sometimes with folks on the left.
I wouldn't want to do that just for this reason, because I don't want to put on equal footing innocent life in the womb.
That's true.
And someone who shot and killed their whole family, or just shot up a Walmart. You know, I don't want to put those lives on the same the same plane.
And for all the liberals out there who are wondering how I, as a Catholic, can support the death penalty, well, you know, I'm sorry, I do. And if that makes me a failed person in your mind, then that's fine. But the Catholic Church also very much believes in the just war theory, and some have extrapolated the just war theory out to identify to support the death penalty. As Chris said, you're talking about two very different things when you're talking innocent life versus someone who has arguably forfeited your life. And I think you made a great distinction there. Let's get to a break. The speaker's stump speech is next. I'm going to give you the second part of the Wall Street Journal editorial and the fair land. That's up next here on News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.